The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into NFL Live on a Friday. I am Dan Graziano, and we have a big show for you. We got reports on the top rookie pass catchers that were taken in this April's draft. Which one is under the most pressure on day one? We have that answer. Plus, who better to give us some insight into what Jordan Love learned last year than some of Aaron Rodgers' backup quarterbacks? We're going to discuss all of that with Mina Kimes, Jeff Darlington, Kimberly Martin. It's NFL Live. It's Friday. We're heading into the summertime. Great to see everybody. But we are going to start today's show in Pittsburgh, where the Steelers made some news yesterday by releasing veteran guard David DeCastro. Cut saves the Steelers $8.7 million in cap space, and they moved quickly to replace DeCastro by signing free agent guard Trey Turner. But this all comes after longtime center Marquise Pouncey retired and the Steelers lost offensive linemen Matt Filer and Alejandro Villanueva in free agency back in March. So big changes for a unit in charge of protecting 39-year-old Ben Roethlisberger. Jeff, how did this all come about?
Well, Dan, as if we didn't already have all these questions about the offensive line, then DeCastro comes along and is dealing with what he now says will be another ankle surgery. He is not sure whether he'll continue his career. He says that he would be happy to hang it up if indeed his ankle can't recover in time for the season. But this is certainly a situation facing this Steelers team that makes things even murkier. Now, we should point out they did sign Trey Turner, a guard who has some Pro Bowls to his resume. He did miss 9 games last year. But now this Steelers team will be with 4 new starters on the offensive line. One other important note, though, here is that they struggled last year, so perhaps they can just get better with a new group, Dan. But
well,
it's going to be tough times for the Steelers.
Right. I mean, that's a good point, Mina. I mean, this was a rough offensive line last year. Look, the team kind of sold out to bring Ben Roethlisberger back for probably one more year, or who knows, maybe two. But how big a concern is this offensive line, and the way it stands in front of Roethlisberger as of now?
It's a massive concern. Now, to be fair, as Jeff said, it was a massive concern last year as well, and a big part of the reason why the Steelers offense struggled so much down the stretch, why the run game struggled, why Ben Roethlisberger was throwing the ball so quickly. But, you know, just because there's change doesn't mean that it's going to be changed for the better. There are just question marks across that line. I know they like Dotson. There's hope that Zach Banner, who's a young tackle, can come up as well. And as you guys said, Trey Turner, you know, he had some good seasons in the past. Last year, of course, was battling injuries. But this is a far cry from, you know, the Steelers line of a few years ago under Mike Munchak, right, when they were one of the better lines in the NFL. And I think it's a good example of how quickly a really great line, a top five line, can suddenly find itself at the bottom of the league. And it's hard for me to see a world in which the Steelers offense looks better than they did last season if Roethlisberger doesn't have better protection.
Yeah, so one-dimensional. Last year, they were first in the league in pass attempts per game, 28th in the league in rush attempts per game. And with the release of DeCastro, you know, they only have one starter on their 2020 offensive line return. They also have other business to take care of here. Free agents to be: quarterback Roethlisberger, wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster, Chukwuma Okorafor, who's going to move to left tackle, T.J. Watt's going to need an extension, Minkah Fitzpatrick at some point is going to need an extension. The Steelers have a lot to do financially, and they don't have an offensive line to build behind. We'll see how that goes. Team that knocked the Steelers out of the playoffs last year, the division rival Cleveland Browns, made a point of trying to upgrade their defense this offseason. Part of that effort was the signing of veteran pass rusher Jadeveon Clowney to replace Olivier Vernon on the defensive line. Clowney, changing teams for the third year in a row, spoke during the Browns' recent minicamp.
I've been training extremely hard this offseason, so I kind of already had a feel of where I was at coming here. I wouldn't have came if I wasn't healthy. I would have told him the same thing. I felt great coming in. I feel great now.
Over the last two seasons, Clowney ranks top 10 in the NFL in pass rush win rate and pressures per game, but just has 3 sacks to show for it. You know, he's never had 10 sacks in a season. And sure, he's missed 11 games due to injury over that last 2 years, but Cleveland is definitely going to need him to convert some of those pressures into sacks, or at least turn them into sacks created for his teammates there, Mina. So what does Clowney bring to this Browns defense?
I think he brings a lot. Sorry, I'm laughing at 211th. I didn't even know there was 210 guys to rank above him. but the thing is, Dan, I feel like Jadeveon Clowney, like, we've almost reached a point where he's underrated. For a while, there was a lot of criticism of him around the league that he was overrated coming out of college because he wasn't able to turn that pass rush production into bringing down the quarterback, which is why he, of course, ranks 211th. But for all of that, he is still incredibly disruptive, especially on the inside, which is where I suspect you'll see him lined up a lot next to Myles Garrett. And he is an elite run defender, and that matters a great deal for this Browns team, because while the defense made a ton of additions, particularly on the back end, which I believe Kimberly's going to talk about, they also had some really significant losses on the defensive line at tackle. Larry Ogunjobi is gone. Sheldon Richardson is gone. They're counting on young players and draft picks like Tommy Togiai to step up. And what would help those players a lot is if Jadeveon Clowney is able to bring that elite run-stopping prowess, that tackling, those tackles for losses that he did in previous stops to this defense. And I think he has that in him because he is still a very, very good player. He's just not one of the best pass rushers in the NFL.
Yeah, Dan, as Mina just talked about, adding Jadeveon Clowney, great move. But I'm looking at this secondary because that, to me, was the question mark all last year. I covered a lot of Browns games. So what do the Browns do in the offseason? They upgrade the back end. Rams had great defense last year, so they bring in John Johnson, Troy Hill. They drafted Greg Newsome, a guy that they love, and you got Grant Delpit back from injury. So they've got a lot of players in this back end that are going to be much improved.
Yeah, I think the fascinating thing about this secondary, Kimberly, is now they've just got bodies. I'm not really sure who's going to start, who's going to play where. Like Greg Newsome, you alluded to, their first draft pick this
year. Where's Greedy Williams?
The starting position, yeah, or right, Greedy over Greedy, or how he is coming back from injury. Ronnie Harrison was decent at safety. Of course, bringing in John Johnson, who was elite in Los Angeles. But that's the beauty of these moves, is that defensive coordinator Joe Woods now has a lot of players to, you know, allocate towards the back end, whereas last year it kind of felt like they were just trying to survive schematically. I think the players that they did pick up, Newsome, Owusu-Koramoah, Johnson Hill, they all fit really well together. And I think as they try to compensate for some of those holes up front that I was talking about, particularly on the defensive line, having a better secondary, and you're correct, that absolutely was the weakness of the team last year, is going to be so helpful for Joe Woods.
And as a result, we now live in a world where preseason expectations are higher for the Browns than they are for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Who would have imagined? Earlier this week, Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib came out as the first openly gay active NFL player, saying he, quote, finally feels comfortable enough to get it off his chest. Earlier today, his teammate Darren Waller was asked his thoughts on Nassib's announcement.
Guys are going to go in with the intention of, you know, accepting him and loving him for who he is, because he's our teammate. It's not anything that's going to change just because he came out. Like, he's going to be the same person that he has been. He's just letting himself be known to the world. So, you know, guys may have these, you know, phobias or things like that, and that's human nature. Like, guys are going to have to work through that. We can talk through that. We can help guys overcome that and realize that, hey, he's a human being, and he deserves to do whatever he does and believe whatever he believes and just be himself. And so that's what we're going to try to do. Will there be hiccups along the way? Will there be guys that have a hard time adjusting? Possibly. But we're going to try our best to make sure this is an environment of unconditional love.
Raiders start training camp on July 27th and open the season on Monday Night Football, hosting Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens here on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Under pressure. He'll be sacked.
It's Jamal Adams one more time.
Not a more impactful safety in football.
Focus each and every day is to try to be the best. Explain if you're really in the game, then they might say your
name in the Hall of Fame. You got to check out this article from our Seahawks reporter, Brady Henderson, over on ESPN.com, where he poses the $20 million question. When will the Seahawks extend Jamal Adams? When indeed? Here is a reminder of what the Seahawks have already spent on Jamal Adams when they traded for him last summer, traded two first-round picks, a third-round pick, and safety Bradley McDougald for Adams and a fourth-round pick coming up in 2022. So, Mina, given all that they paid to acquire him, do the Seahawks need to get this extension done?
They don't really have a choice, Stan. I mean, they made their decision the second they traded away all those picks you saw there, gave up their leverage. And this is something we've seen happen in the NFL before. I think of the Texans trading for Laremy Tunsil. When that happens, and a player doesn't have much time left on their deal, but a team gives up, you know, a yacht full of draft picks for them, you know he's going to get paid. Now, whether or not he's worth it, I think, is interesting and debatable. Because on one hand, look, Jamal Adams is a phenomenal player, set the record for sacks at his position last year, incredibly disruptive, physical, a tone setter on that defense, an emotional leader, I think. But on the other hand, wasn't phenomenal in coverage. He was injured some of last season, and I do see how, as a football team, you're thinking about your roster and how you're allocating your cap, not wanting to spend that much money, $20 million, on a safety who isn't elite in coverage, given how pass-heavy the NFL is today. But that's not the world we live in. We live in a world where the Seahawks already gave up all those draft picks for him. And I will say, I do think he can rebound a bit in coverage this year because Seattle will have more depth up front. And they won't need him to rush the passer and blitz as much as they did last year. And he can focus more on getting healthy and on playing well on that side of the ball.
Yeah, they may not need him, but he is awfully good at it. And he plays all over, right? He played over 150 snaps at safety, linebacker, and cornerback. But most of those snaps came at outside linebacker, which is a big reason why he had 9.5 sacks, which led the team. It's been three years, two GMs and four head coaches since the Cleveland Browns made Baker Mayfield the number one pick in the 2018 draft. After 3 years, the rules say you can negotiate a contract extension if you and your team feel like it. Saw it last year with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, Deshaun Watson in Houston. Browns have already picked up Baker Mayfield's fifth-year option, which will pay him $18.85 million in 2022 if they don't extend him, but they might, just as the Bills might extend Josh Allen and the Ravens might extend Lamar Jackson. All three different situations, Jeff, that 2018 quarterback draft class up for extension. Do you think Baker could be the first of those three to get one?
Well, I do, and I wouldn't have thought that until Tony Grossi, longtime reporter covering the Cleveland Browns, spoke to Baker's agent and reported that, in fact, they do believe a deal could get done this summer, pointing out that they don't feel the need to wait on the Lamar Jackson and the Josh Allen deals to get done because the quarterback market has already set itself with other recent deals. Also pointing out they know what the cap will be in future. They feel like they have an idea that it will go up in the next 2 years. They feel like the parameters are set. Now, that being said, it's still a Browns situation where they do have him under control for this year and the fifth-year option. One other thing we should point out here is that generally these deals do happen June, July. That's when Patrick Mahomes got his deal done, Carson Wentz, going all the way back, Andrew Luck. Most of the time, when you get that rookie deal, that first big deal comes June or July. So we should be paying close attention to this one in the coming weeks.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, the Browns have made it clear. They love Baker. They want Baker long term. The question is when, right? But they're not under any pressure to get something done now, because as you said, they have that fifth-year option, and they have other guys, Nick Chubb, Grant, like Wyatt Teller. They've got guys that they also have to look after from a long-term perspective. So Baker, both sides want to be together. How much financially do they want to come to an agreement on it? You know, I think this gets done, but really, the Browns, Andrew Berry, their GM, is not somebody who just spends money willy-nilly and says, okay, we've got to get this guy locked up right now. He can be patient because he knows that Baker is going to be the guy. Now, I did ask people around the league, what happens if they don't sign him? What if Baker balls out? Then the Browns have to pay even more money. And you know what? That's actually not a bad problem to have. If you're the Browns, okay, what's a couple more million dollars when your QB is balling out and playing at an elite level?
Yeah, they call that the Dak Prescott plan, I think, in Dallas. You know, it's interesting because Mayfield's fifth-year option number for 22 is lower than those of Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson because they've hit performance benchmarks. Kimberly, what do you know about where things stand with the Ravens and a potential Lamar Jackson extension?
So that's another one where that's the one where everybody's like, okay, this has to get done, right? But it's similar in that if Lamar does ball out and they don't do a deal now, they're comfortable paying him because unlike Baker, he's been a league MVP. He's been in the playoffs every year that he's been in the league. So, and Lamar doesn't have a traditional agent. So I'm not sure how that is affecting things, whether it's slowing down the process or not, because his mom is his manager and handles his affairs, and they keep things very close to the vest. But the Ravens do want to lock up Lamar. I think this is the deal that actually would get done before Baker.
Yeah, Dan, this is such an interesting timing situation because we go back to the deals of Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, where those teams regret probably doing those deals as early as they did after the third season. And then the Cowboys, on the other hand, waiting so long with Dak Prescott and perhaps paying more than they would have wanted. GMs now are facing this unique dilemma of trying to walk that line of whether they should pay their quarterback after the third season or wait out that fourth year and do it before the fifth year option. So tricky situation for all three teams, all three of which will try their best to address these situations in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, and we will track those situations as the summer progresses.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
My desire to start and finish with the same organization may not be a reality.
Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay.
It's never been about the draft pick. I love coaching staff.
Love you, brother.
Love my teammates.
It's not so much what they did, it's really how they did it.
This was put in motion last year, and the wrench was just kind of thrown into it when I won MVP.
End zone touchdown!
Is he the MVP or what?
Thing of beauty!
It's just kind of about a philosophy. About doing things the right way.
Without a doubt, I think it's inexcusable that the organization let it get to this point.
If people make an organization, and sometimes that gets forgotten.
If you've watched any of our programming over the past 2 months, you're well aware that reigning MVP quarterback Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay and has been a no-show so far this offseason. Rodgers can be a tough guy to figure out. Some might say a complicated fella. So we sought some help from people who've been closest to him. His former backup quarterbacks. There's been quite a few since Rodgers took over as the full-time quarterback from Brett Favre in 2008. Our Sam Borden caught up with some of the understudies.
I'm Seneca Wallace, and I was Aaron Rodgers' backup for one season.
Joe Callahan, and I was Aaron Rodgers' backup for 3 years.
Brett Hundley, and I was Aaron Rodgers' backup for 3 seasons.
Graham Harrell, and I was Aaron Rodgers' backup for 3 seasons.
For more than a decade, you've known Aaron Rodgers for this.
Touchdown! 40-yard bomb from Aaron Rodgers! Hail Mary answered again!
Rodgers the magician!
But for anyone who spent any time in the Green Bay Packers quarterback room, Rodgers will always be known for something else.
A deep thought person. I mean, some of the stuff that you know, that he would come up with. And you're like, dude, did you just come up with that just now?
If I was going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings and play the little trivia night, I'd bring Aaron because he would be really good at it.
Rodgers' brain is put on display each week when one of Green Bay's backup quarterbacks puts together a test that's a little bit unusual.
The QB test for a backup quarterback in Green Bay might be one of your most stressful parts of the week. The first half is usually like football questions about the team that you're about to play and the defense that you're about to face. And then the second half, that's a little bit more on the fun side with trivia and riddles and funny videos. You really have to think about what you're putting into it.
You can get him every now and then on geography or something like that. You know, like history, he's sharpened. He's good in history, good in movies, good in music. And if you stumped him, one, he'd get mad at you, but he'd appreciate it in the long run. You know what I mean? Because he thinks he kind of prides himself in knowing a lot about everything.
He didn't like losing at all. I really hope Aaron watches this because I think the biggest thing that we had a battle was our body types, especially mine. You know, I like to be very fit, six pack, you know, looking good, trim. And Aaron, his body fat percentage was through the roof most of the time when I was there. But I think that was the biggest struggle for Aaron. So, like, Aaron now, you know, if you watch this, man, I hope your body percentage fattens down.
My rookie year, he invited us over for a little barbecue at his house. And then midway through the night, he broke out his karaoke microphone, which ranks how well you sing the song. Then we started duetting amongst the quarterbacks to see who could get the highest duet score. And, you know, that turned from, you know, just a fun little barbecue to us competing over karaoke.
How was Aaron as a singer?
He really sticks to some of the lower notes. He doesn't go outside his comfort zone. And I would definitely double check the calibration on that microphone because his scores seemed a little too high that day.
Backups in Green Bay quickly learn that Rodgers' interests range widely, very widely.
We definitely had some conversations that were a little out there.
He's always thinking the crazy conspiracies. And so he's like, hey, what do you think all that stuff is flying behind that jet stream? Do you think that, you know, has anything to do with maybe why everybody's getting cancer? That's just kind of his attitude. That's the way he's, you know, wired.
You could go from talking about football then to talking about conspiracies about, you know, who built the pyramids. And, you know, there wasn't just one subject that we talked about.
Who does he think built the pyramids?
You know, I mean, that's an in-house conversation. We can't reveal what we know.
A new backup has entered the room. First-round draft choice Jordan Love. And while some viewed the pick as disrespectful to Rodgers, his former backups know there's no better place for Love to be.
Green Bay definitely got the formula right the first time around with back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks. It gave Aaron maybe a little bit extra motivation.
If you see some of those young guys, he starts to build them up. He might tear you down first, and then he's going to build you up a little bit, but helps build that character and helps build that team camaraderie that you need.
Aaron's not going to give up that position, I'll tell you that. Jordan will be sitting for a while, but, you know, when time comes, hey, you know, whenever it comes, I'm sure Aaron will teach him what he needs to teach. And
Rodgers' backups haven't seen the field very much since he took over as Green Bay starter in 2008. In fact, only two other Packers quarterbacks have more than 100 pass attempts over that span, and none of them have played well enough to post a QBR over 45. Since becoming the full-time starter, Rodgers has accounted for 89% of Green Bay's pass attempts. And Mina, in spite of what his former backups were saying, this team may, in fact, just be turned over to Jordan Love this year. If that is the case, what should the expectations be for the Packers?
Well, it would be quite different. So, backing up to last year, when Green Bay drafted Jordan Love, it was surprising, of course. It was the biggest surprise of the draft because Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers, because he had so many years left on his contract. But it wasn't surprising in one way, Dan, which is that Jordan Love was seen as a prospect who would need time to sit on the bench, whatever team he went to. He wasn't expected to come in and start right away. He had amazing arm talent in college, beautiful deep ball, throwing on the run, but he did struggle with decision making. In fact, in his final year at Utah State, he threw 17 interceptions to 20 touchdowns. That, I don't need to tell you, is very unlike Aaron Rodgers, who has maybe thrown 17 interceptions in several years. I will say, for Jordan Love, the one thing working in his favor would be that I believe Green Bay's offense is very quarterback friendly, and I think it would be very friendly to his skill set in particular. They would incorporate a lot of rollouts, a lot of play action, a moving pocket. And I think the combination of that offensive line, which still has some stars, as well as Davante Adams, Aaron Jones, Robert Tonyan, it would be a good context for Jordan Love to walk into. But that doesn't mean the transition wouldn't be rough for the young quarterback, especially coming off of such a tumultuous offseason.
Yeah, Mina, with the head coach in Matt LaFleur, who can certainly groom him as well, I actually don't put the pressure on Jordan Love as much as I apply the pressure to the Packers front office. Because, by the way, how many first-round quarterbacks do we see that get to spend more than a season on the bench getting themselves acclimated? Like, if Jordan Love is not ready for week one, should he be called upon, the Packers never should have spent a first-round pick on him in the first place. Think back to, like, when Jared Goff got drafted, albeit as a first overall pick. He was, like, 8 games into his rookie year and hadn't seen the field yet, and everybody was freaking out like he was the ultimate bust. Jordan Love has gotten a year. If he's not ready by week one, quite honestly, in this day and age, he's not ready. And that would be a colossal mistake, in my opinion, an admission of a mistake, if, in fact, that's the case for the Packers front office.
In fairness, if memory serves, Goff was sitting behind Case Keenum, who was not, at that time, the reigning most valuable player in the NFL.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Top-ranked boxing Saturday night from Las Vegas. Former lightweight champ Vasily Lomachenko makes his return to the ring against Masayoshi Nakatani. Main card starts at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific on ESPN Plus in English and Spanish. To get ESPN Plus, go to ESPNplus.com or download the ESPN app. One app, one tap. We have game 4 between the Suns and the Clippers tomorrow night at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific on ESPN and the aforementioned ESPN app. SportsCenter with Stephen A. starts our coverage at 7:30 Eastern, followed by the Countdown crew, who will take you right up to game time. The Washington football team won the NFC East last year with a 7-9 record, but things were a bit lopsided down there in our nation's capital. Washington's defense ranked top 5 in points per game, yards per game allowed, while also holding opposing quarterbacks to the 5th lowest QBR. But on offense, they ranked in the bottom of the league in all those same areas, including the worst team total QBR in the entire National Football League. Enter 38-year-old Harvard man Ryan Fitzpatrick, who signed with the Washington football team this offseason. They also have Taylor Heineke, and they have Kyle Allen. Kimberly, you recently spoke with Washington head coach Ron Rivera. What did you learn about their quarterback situation?
It's crazy to think about it, that a 38-year-old guy could be the answer for you. But Ron Rivera is really psyched about having Ryan Fitzpatrick. We all understand he is a bridge to whoever the franchise guy eventually will be. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, you mentioned it, Harvard guy. He's brilliant when it comes to football. He's got veteran experience over 16 seasons. But more importantly, he and Rivera share that sort of moxie, that Fitzpatrick almost has that YOLO, like, I'm going for it. I'm going to act like I'm Patrick Mahomes in this moment. He's going to let that ball go. And that sort of aggressiveness and that sort of veteran presence is what they lacked last year. I think if you ask anybody, the QB position was their Achilles heel. And a lot of people in that organization feel, had they made a switch at QB sooner from Dwayne Haskins, that season might have gone a little differently. So Ryan Fitzpatrick brings all of the intangibles that they didn't have into an improved season.
Yeah, I would bet my life savings on the Washington passing attack being better than it was last year, largely because it would be impossible to be worse. You saw they were 32nd in the NFL. There is nowhere to go but up. But also because Ryan Fitzpatrick's been playing good football lately. He's pushing it downfield. And on top of that, I like the group of skill players they've got around him. I'm particularly excited with this move at quarterback for Terry McLaurin, who I believe in my heart of hearts has the potential to be one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. He really has all of the skills you'd want in a true X: speed, size, contested catch ability, route running. Last year, guys, his average depth of target was cut nearly in half by 5 yards. And I can tell you, that is not because of Terry McLaurin. That is because of the guys who are throwing him the football and because the offense was so conservative as a result. This year, the offense will not be conservative with Ryan Fitzpatrick under offensive coordinator Scott Turner. They've got a really complementary group of weapons beyond McLaurin, adding Curtis Samuel to man the slot from Carolina. And as well as drafting Dyami Brown, who I really like as a Z receiver, and of course Antonio Gibson, the running back who broke out last season. This has the potential to be a much better offense than last year, and that begins with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes we overstate the use of the term culture change and the impact that someone can have on the organizational culture. This is an organization that needs that culture change more than any other in the NFL, and it already got a boost with Ron Rivera. And being down here in South Florida, talking to members of the Dolphins organizations, I cannot emphasize enough how much Ryan meant to the people down here, on and off the field, in the business affairs side of things, and in the football building. I think the impact that he can have on that organization extends far beyond the playing field and will ultimately impact the playing field. So, yeah, look, I get it. We do overstate that. It becomes a cliche in the NFL to talk about the cultural impact of a player. In this case, I think it is very legitimate.
We'll see how it goes in Washington. Fitzpatrick's never been to the playoffs, and there hasn't been a repeat champion in the NFC East in 17 years.
Welcome to the 2021 NFL Draft.
I've been waiting for that call my whole life.
All my hard work's paying off.
Ready to get to work. I'm a beast, yeah. I'm a dog, yeah.
I'm a flex, huh? That everybody's playing faster.
Still have a lot to learn.
When I do get my opportunity, I just have to be ready for that moment.
I'm looking forward to just getting out there and competing and hopefully learning as much as I possibly can. I'm in stun mode, baby, I'm in stun mode. Jackie
Chan on, pulling stunts, so stunts, yeah. Got a great article up on ESPN.com right now asking the question, which first round NFL picks are drawing rave reviews? What we learned about all 32 this offseason. When you're done watching our show, you can go ahead and read about every first round pick in that article. But right now we only have about 10 minutes, so we want to focus on four of them in particular, the pass catchers that were selected back in April. And you see our NFL Nation reporters here ready to tell you what they know. We are going to start with Michael Rothstein and his observations of Falcons number 4 overall pick, Kyle Pitts.
On draft night, Atlanta Falcons coach Arthur Smith said he would use Kyle Pitts multiple places. So far, that's exactly what the Falcons have done. During OTAs and minicamp, they used the tight end in line, in the slot, and out wide. Now, receivers Calvin Ridley and Russell Gage were not at OTAs or minicamp, so it's not entirely clear what this offense is going to look like, but one thing is pretty certain. Kyle Pitts will be a big part of Atlanta's offense in 2021.
So, Jeff, what are we expecting from Pitts in year one in terms of his impact?
I mean, what am I expecting? I'm expecting unequivocally the offensive rookie of the year. Put the quarterbacks aside. I get how impactful those quarterbacks can be, but I think Kyle Pitts will be an absolute monster. We have been long searching for the tight end who would have ultimately changed the market. Yes, Travis Kelce is a beast. Yes, George Kittle is a beast. Kyle Pitts has the chance and the potential and the skill set to change the tight end market, and I think this year is the beginning of that.
Yeah, you know what they think of him. They're about to trade Julio Jones. They left all those wide receivers on the board and took the tight end instead. Obviously, they think he is going to be a big weapon for them for years to come. After the Falcons drafted Pitts, the Bengals picked wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase from LSU, former teammate of their quarterback Joe Burrow. Our man Ben Baby on Ja'Marr Chase.
The Cincinnati Bengals are banking on rookie wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase on becoming an immediate playmaker.
Chase showed what he could bring to the Bengals offense in the final 7-on-7 passing period of the offseason. At one point during the drill, he was the go-to target for Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow in a period that featured zero incompletions. When asked about his former LSU teammate afterward, Burrow said, quote, "I'm excited about where he's at. He's a really smart player who understands what we're trying to do in the offense."
Kimberly Martin, what are you hearing on the Burrow-Chase connection?
Dan, we already knew about the connection between these two because the Bengals gave up a chance to take an offensive lineman to protect their QB who tore his knee up, right? They took Ja'Marr Chase because of that chemistry that they have, and it's palpable. Their offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan, said this week, you can feel that chemistry. You can feel that these guys know each other, and that's a great thing because Joe Burrow not only coming back from the knee, but he showed flash. But there were signs of inconsistency. So having Ja'Marr Chase, his buddy, his playmaker there, the Bengals are going to be something to watch this year.
And to be fair, they did address the offensive line in some of the later rounds, just not the first one where they thought they had a superstar in Ja'Marr Chase. Next pick after that was a wide receiver. The Miami Dolphins took Alabama's Jalen Waddle. Cameron Wolf has been watching Jalen Waddle in practice. Cameron, what have you seen?
Remember the old Need for Speed video game? Well, Jalen Waddle's the Dolphins version of the fastest sports car you can find. In just small glimpses of him catching passes from Tua, we saw that Waddle's speed is for real. One example, a 40-yard completion where Waddle turned on the jets, sped past defenders into the end zone. Coach Brian Flores said he's working hard, he's learning his teammates well, learning the playbook well, and as far as his health, he's running really well. The Dolphins hope this fall he'll be running into the end zone.
Mina, what do the Dolphins need from Jalen Waddle in year one?
They need him to be open, Dan, like really, really open. Because if there's one thing that Tua Tagovailoa struggled with at times last year, there were a few things, but the one thing I think he needs to address the most is he needs to take more risks, throwing the ball downfield, be more aggressive, and he's more likely to do so if his former teammate at Alabama, Jalen Waddle, is streaking down the sideline. It's great to hear that he's running and looks good because, of course, last time we saw him in college, he was battling an injury. Luckily, if he's ready week one, that is quite an impressive wide receiving group for Tua.
Yeah, and they need it. They needed to upgrade that position. Who better to do it with than the reigning Heisman Trophy winner? There's another couple picks after that until another wide receiver went. The Eagles traded up with the Cowboys ahead of the Giants. A lot of NFC East action going on there to take Devontae Smith, who actually was the Heisman Trophy winner. Sorry about that, Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith. I mixed them up. Tim McManus, newly mustachioed Tim McManus, is in Philadelphia. He's been watching Devontae Smith.
What really pops about Devontae Smith is how easy he makes things look. One-handed catches, leaping grabs in the corner of the end zone. There's a flow to his game that stands out even when he's surrounded by world-class athletes. And Coach Nick Sirianni has taken notice, saying that Smith, quote, catches everything and that his change of direction is even better than what he saw on tape coming out of Alabama. Smith's been working with the first team this offseason, and he's got a real chance of being the Eagles' lead receiver as a rookie.
Mina, is Devontae Smith under the most pressure of any of these rookie wide receivers? And if only because I didn't remember he won the Heisman.
I think he'll forgive you. Look, he's under pressure in one sense. Not, I think, in terms of, you know, having to help his team win football games, because candidly, not many people expect the Eagles to compete to win the division this year. They are a rebuilding organization. But as our colleague Tim alluded to, he walks into that field as the obvious number one wide receiver. And it is a thin, young group, which, of course, has been the issue in Philadelphia for a few seasons now as they've battled injuries. And look, Ja'Marr Chase, for example, we talked about, he's the number one wide receiver in Cincinnati, but he gets to play with T. Higgins, who had 900 yards last year, and Tyler Boyd, who's really underrated. Kyle Pitts gets to play with Calvin Ridley, who is, of course, fantastic. Jalen Waddle on the Dolphins gets to play with Devontae Parker and Will Fuller. You get it. But in Philadelphia, Devontae Smith, he's with Jalen Reagor, who didn't really produce as much as I think they would have hoped last year, and then a bunch of question marks. I mean, Greg Ward, I believe, is the oldest wide receiver on that roster. Now, I love Devontae Smith as a prospect. I thought he was incredible. His versatility was tremendous. The only real knock on him was the size. But he is under a lot of pressure to help Jalen Hurts establish himself as the future in Philadelphia because, of course, no one really knows if that's the case now.
Yeah, Mina mentioned the word thin. That's the question with Devontae Smith. That was the question that he had to answer all offseason through the draft process. And really, there is a lot of pressure for him. But when you look at the Eagles organization as a whole, there's pressure on everyone because you have a new head coach in Nick Sirianni. He's never done this before. You got Jalen Hurts, who did start last year but four games, and now this is his first year as the guy. And then you bring in Devontae Smith. The good thing for the two of them is that they have experience together. They used to be former college teammates, and they have that bond already. And when I did my draft profile on Devontae Smith, he talked about the expectations that are on him and his size and his weight, and he said, look, I'm a football player. You want a bodybuilder? You want a guy that can ball, because I could ball. And so Jalen Hurts also, he knows the expectations are high. So the two of them come together, they have the familiarity, and that should at least help offset some of the pressure that they're about to face.
One of several reunions we're seeing this year between the rookie pass catchers and the quarterbacks they played with in college. We have time for one more thing, and it is Patriots related. Linebacker Dante Hightower told the Boston Globe about the Week 4 Patriots-Bucks game against Tom Brady. It's going to be good to see 12 again. I've been going against him in practice for so long. Looking forward to playing against him. Jeff Darlington, what do we make of this?
Dante, I don't remember Chase Young. Chase Young's a rookie. Like, I understood why he said it, Dante. But Dante, I'm just playing. I understand. He's just trying to be nice here. And by the way, is anybody as excited as I am about Week 4? That game is going to be so epic.
Yes.
I don't even want to think about Week 5. Week 4 is going to be amazing.
I cannot wait, and I cannot say enough things about Dante Hightower. Everyone who's see me talk about the Patriots knows how much I love him. In fact, I think that team missed him as much as they missed Tom Brady last year. He's the quarterback of that defense, and having him back in that front seven, calling plays with the other additions they've made up front, that's going to be a difficult matchup for Tom Brady. Like, this is not the Patriots we saw last season.
Yeah. Listen, Tom Brady's dad is excited about this game, so of course we are.
We're excited you joined us today on NFL Live. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We will be back next week. Until then, take care.